Blog Talk Radio.
That's an auspicious start.
I was just about to say hello.
No music. What is going on here? Oh boy. Well, I had somebody else in mind for that, but I was actually going to have the Nightmare on Elm Street theme play over, but it wasn't in any sound whatsoever. That's pretty sad. I buy a brand new laptop and this stuff happened. So this all goes to Blog Talk Radio's fault. But as I've for my monologue, I'm going to mention Wes Craven. Whether you watched Last House on the Left or The Hills Have Eyes in the 1970s or the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise in the 1980s or the Scream franchise of the 1990s, 2000s, Wes Craven's movies left an impressionable vision to all up-and-coming horror actors, all directors, and all horror, and most of all, almost all horror fans. Had it not been for Wes Craven, the horror rebound might not have happened. There's no doubt his influence will always remain to all of us in the world of horror. Darbin Horror Radio, after all. What is up? A tremendous Thursday evening to you, and welcome to the fall return of Darbin Horror Radio. My name is Eric Polk, and tonight we will start the fall season with a look at the legendary Wes Craven, who passed away this past August 30th, and we will be talking about his legacy in the world of horror, and we'll be taking your phone calls as always. It's 1-877-552-4073, and for our international listeners, the number to call is 323-843-6113, and it's been about 2 months since we did this last. I was slightly inebriated the last time we did a show back on my birthday, but I promise you I am clean and sober tonight. And of course, as you all know who have listened to me for a long time, I cannot hang on the burden of a weekly 1 hour internet based radio show all by myself, and Kenny is attacking my laptop right now. Oh my god. This is going way beyond Spinal Tap. Anyway, on the other end of the tin can string, funded by an evil corporation.
Carry on my wayward son.
I am the mistress of dollarbenhorror.blogspot.com. And if there's one thing he's ready for this week, it is coming back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, should be coming back to the show. Sorry, my cat was playing on the laptop again. We're off to a raucous start here this week on DBHR, folks.
I know.
Anyhow, Rhonda, what's happening? What's been going on? How was your summer?
Good part of the day. Crazy, stressful. Yeah, I needed to be fall. I needed to be cold. I needed to be time to get out this house. And, not be so stressed out about everything. I need Cinema Wasteland to come back. Is it October yet, please?
In about 3 weeks, that's what we're all looking forward to here on BBHR, with October, our favorite month of the year. And that brings us to a reminder that next week we'll be joined by the head hauntress of the Facebook Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness Contest. I'm talking, of course, about Mrs. Elizabeth Catherine Gray. She'll be joining us to discuss the big rules of the madness. And this year, it is Descent into Darkness. So you'll definitely want to check that out. It is, of course, it is almost time for the madness, the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness Contest. And this is your official podcast home for all things Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness. So definitely check that out. And if you guys want to get on the conversation tonight, the number to call is 1-877-552-4073. International callers, 323-843-6113. We're going to be talking about the legacy of Mr. Wes Craven, but before we do, we've got a couple things to look back on. But Rhonda, I will start with you. Did you see anything good over the summer by any chance?
I didn't really get to see anything new, like over the summer. Really, I had some things come up dealing with some stuff, but I did get to go to my first Comic-Con.
How was that?
It was fun. It's just a small one. It's called the Neo Comic-Con, Northeast Ohio. It was definitely an experience. It took place at the same place Cinema Wasteland does, but in a different room, just like a smaller section of the room that Cinema Wasteland takes place in. Mm-hmm. I really wish the section wasn't smaller. They, I believe, expected 1,000 people to show up. There was 1,000 by noon.
Oh, wow.
It was so crowded. Like, you could literally stand in one spot for 20 minutes and not be able to move. Like, there was a lot of people. Not to mention the fact that I'm carrying a giant hammer because I'm dressed up as Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, every time I move, I'm just like, please don't hit anyone. Please don't hit anyone. Please don't hit anyone.
Nice picture, by the way.
Thank you. But, yes, so it was fun, and there's another Comic-Con coming up in October. I believe it's October 24th out at the Cuyahoga County Fairgrounds. And then I believe Wizard World comes back in February.
Oh, yes, the big one.
Yes, the one I will not pay William Shatner $80 for an autograph for.
That's...
You know what? I heard that the guy from Herschel from The Walking Dead was at the last Wizard World, and he was just walking around. And someone told me he was only charging like $10 or $20 for an autograph compared to other people at Wizard.
Nice.
And he was just walking around taking pictures with people. So,
nice.
I mean, he's from a big show and he's a big character on the show. It's friggin' Herschel.
He's not charging
people $80 for an autograph and $80 extra if you want a picture. Jeez.
Yeah, I was talking to, that kind of leads me into something else. So I was talking, I visited a fellow Madness Maniac at Tracy Dale Isle here a couple weeks ago, and she was telling me about when she met Norman Reedus, how very inexpensive it was to meet him at, I believe it was at a few years ago, right before The Walking Dead blew up, and he didn't charge very much, but now he's like...
Well, I mean, it depends where you go, because I know at the... Comic-Con, the Wizard World, it was still pretty expensive. Almost the same as Shatner, I want to say. But but also, if you look at the two, no offense, I know Shatner's more famous or whatever, but Norman Reedus actually, like, does more for his fans, has more little events for his fans. I think now you can actually win a date with Norman Reedus. Like,
yeah,
I don't see Shatner doing that. I'm just saying. Which is another reason I wouldn't pay the money, because Norman is someone who, like, does stuff for his fans. When's the last time you heard William Shatner actually, like, do anything?
Liz were here right now, she actually met William Shatner at the last Comic-Con she attended and got him to sign a script from the Star Trek original series. I believe it was the Omega Glory. Sign a copy of a script, but other than that, from what I've read, he's kind of not very friendly. He's not really, you know, that kind of deal, from what I hear. But enough William Shatner talk for one lifetime. 1-877-552-4073 is the number to call if you guys want to get interested on the conversation. We're going to be talking about the passing of Wes Craven and many of his. And talking about the legacy he left in the world of horror, and it was a rather giant legacy. I don't know where to begin with him, but I'm sure we might start from the beginning. Who knows? But I have two shows I want to talk about here real quick before we get into that. I want to first talk about the ending of Hannibal, the TV series, which after three short seasons, it has gone by the wayside and it's gone to cult TV status heaven. and you know, for me, I felt it was the best TV show. It was the best current TV show. I mean, it buries Walking Dead, buries every buries every television show, but it only had a cult, following. And then, you know what they all, you know what they did at the, towards the end of this season? They moved to Saturday night. It was on Thursday nights at 10. Then they moved to Saturday nights at 10. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, luckily I have Hulu, so we can watch. I can watch it any time I want to, but still, that's, you know, stupid. You know, nobody watches TV at 6. No, probably anybody watches TV Saturday nights at 10. You know, they're watching movies or doing stuff. But
yeah, they're out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh wait, there was one other thing I saw, but I'm gonna let you finish because I need to talk about this. I've totally, it just crossed my mind. I just saw it yesterday. Go ahead.
All right, no problem. So, the ending of Hannibal, I've seen a lot of good TV show endings and a lot of bad TV show endings. This one made me drop my jaw. I had to rewind it again, and I was screaming at the TV. I was shocked.
In a good or a bad way?
You know, I'll tell you what, I hated the ending, not because it was bad, but I wanted more than what I got, because it was so good.
So in a good, but yet disappointed because it's going away way.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, you can't, I was yelling at the TV, you can't end it like this, you cannot end it like this. And then there's like one post-credit sequence with Gillian Anderson sitting at the dinner table, and well, I don't want to give too much away, but but let's just see, she has a leg up on the situation. I'll leave it at that. Her character had a leg up on the situation. Pardon my pun, but yeah, but for, I mean, I wish I would have seen more. I wish it would have ended differently, but but Hannibal is what it is, a very surrealistic, very violent, very dark show, and, you know, maybe in hindsight, I should have been surprised at how it ended. Because at the end of the day, if you watch all 39 episodes of Hannibal, you realize that this is, you're watching essentially a love story between Hannibal and Will Graham. If you sit down and think about things. Oh, I'm serious. I mean, not like you know, a homoerotic, you know, gay kind of thing, but there's like a genuine, yeah, some of my wife says a bromance. That's where that is. I don't speak current lingo, so. For the most part, but yeah, I was mad that it ended. You know, I wanted to see more, but you know, it wasn't terrible. This was all a dream sequence.
Oh, God. I hate when those happen.
Yeah, I hate those, too. But anyway, what did you want to talk about?
I finally saw the preview of the new season of Supernatural.
Oh, yes. Tell us about that. I was going to ask you about that down the road, but
there is some crazy shit happening. Castiel seems like he's evil or something. Crowley was in a minister's outfit. Dean, well, he was Dean. I love when he answered the phone, Ghostbusters! And Sam, something's wrong with Sam. I think the darkness, whatever that darkness that released, somehow I think it's inside of Sam.
Uh-oh.
Because he had, like, black veins on his neck and all kinds of crazy shit was going on. And it just seemed like the roles are all reversed. People you thought were bad don't seem bad. And people who were good are just, like Cast was, like, fucking somebody up.
Oh my
god.
Know
what was going on?
How has that show been on the air? Been at least a good 10 years, hasn't it?
This is the oh god. I think this is season 10. Either season 10 or 11, yeah.
Yeah, I know it's been on for a while.
And they were doing an interview. Originally, the show was only written for 6 seasons. But people have loved it so much, and in a recent interview, the creator said there's no end in sight. As long as fans want it, we'll make it.
Oh, wow.
That made me so happy. I was like, thank you. I will watch. I will watch as long as they make it. Like, if Dean is in a freaking wheelchair and Sam is using a walker, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
But I also saw a trailer for the new Krampus movie. It looks good, but it just wasn't what I was expecting. It's like more of like a modern kind of horror film, and I was expecting more of like old school kind of stuff, but it looks a lot more modern than what I was expecting for a Krampus movie, because the Krampus is like an old school legend, and it just seems a lot more modern than I would think it was. But it seems interesting, and it's something to look forward to for Christmas instead of another fucking Jingle All the Way.
Now, there's another movie that's coming out towards Christmas that I'm looking forward to. We're going to devote an entire show to that here December the 10th.
Mm-hmm. I know which one it is.
Yes. It has nothing to do with Hobbits or Rings. Of course, I don't know if anybody in this movie is going to wear a ring, but there'll be more details to come as weeks progress here on Dollarman Horror Radio. And we hope that you tune in and give us a call tonight. The number to call is, as always, 1-877-552-4073. And for our international listeners, the number to call is 323-843-6113. Okay, so the big hype, Fear the Walking Dead, debuted here 3 weeks ago, you know, to much fanfare, and I believe it was the highest ratings ever for cable. And in case you've been living under a rock and you don't know what Fear the Walking Dead is, well, it's a spinoff of The Walking Dead, and it takes place at the start of the zombie apocalypse as everything is starting to go to hell. Well, I can tell you another thing that can go to hell is the main cast. Basically,
oh,
yeah, you're gonna love this one. Basically, the cast is a blended family. You know, you have the mother, you have the mom and the stepdad, or stepdad or dad and the stepmom, however you want to do it. You have two sons and a daughter. Now, keep in mind, this is from two separate families, and one of the sons has a heroin problem. He's about the only interesting character I've seen so far. I mean, there's no Rick. There's no Rick type of character. There's no Daryl. There's no kind of Michonne. They're just so damn boring that by the time you see the zombies start popping up, you don't care. I mean, the last episode, there was a riot that went on that made the episode a little interesting. But you know, it's like, are these characters going to have a personality other than the kids trying to get off of heroin? And that's been the main source. I think that's been the main source of contention with people I've talked to about the show. It's just the characters are just so damn boring, you know. And you would figure the show does take place in Los Angeles, okay? That's good. But you would figure at the start of a zombie apocalypse, it would also go to other places around the country, or maybe around the world, perhaps.
Yeah, and show how it affected different people.
Yeah, exactly. But now we're treated to this, frankly, this boring family that, you know, just drags drags the show down. If you care to disagree with my opinion, feel free. Maybe I'm missing something. But it's kind of, you know. We'll see what happens. There's still 4 more episodes to go before the season finale, so maybe something will pick up. Maybe we'll have the promise of a wonderful new character. Maybe, who knows? You know, but like I said, I'm really disappointed in it so far. But maybe we'll pick up. All right.
Well, I'm hearing. Well, something I'm interested in, I don't have cable, which really sucks because the show comes on cable, and I kind of want to see this season, is American Horror Story, Hotel. Now, the first season I wasn't really keen on. It kind of picked up. I kind of liked some of the seasons, but this one seems a lot more interesting, as in they're basing kind of, like really loosely, they're basing it on the house of H.H. Holmes, a real-life serial killer who turned an entire hotel, pretty much, into a murder house during the World's Fair. And it's really interesting because the main character, or one of the main characters they casted, was Lady Gaga, who will play a character similar, according to what I'm reading, as Elizabeth Bathory. So it's kind of an interesting twist. I kind of want to see how that progresses.
Well, I kind of gave up on, I was like, maybe it's the second season of American Horror Story when we kind of gave up on it. You know, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just boring in parts. Yeah, I kind of felt stopped watching it.
Well, it's definitely had its good and bad episodes, in my opinion. But it just seems really interesting this season, like the storyline they're going with and the characters they're creating. I want to watch this season. I want to get into it. So I'm going to have to find a way around it being on cable.
There's ways to do it.
I know. But I kind of want to get into it. I kind of want to see this season.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm for the madness because, you know, that's worth points. And speaking of the madness, that brings us to Mrs. Elizabeth Catherine Gray will be joining us next week as she discusses the rules of this year's Madness Contest. And the theme this year is Descent into Darkness, and we look forward to having you on. Yes, that's right. She'll be back the head of the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness Contest. So be sure you tune in for that. All right, 1-877-552-4073 is the number to call if you guys want to get in tonight on the conversation. 323-843-6113 for our international listeners. Okay, so August 30th, we lose Wes Craven, famed horror director. Apparently, he was having a bout with cancer that really no one really knew about. I didn't know about it until I found out what his cause of death was.
Yeah, I didn't know either.
Yeah, and I was kind of stunned. I mean, we hadn't really heard from him since. The last movie he did was Scream 4, and he did was the executive producer for a few TV shows afterwards. But didn't really hear much from him in the way of making movies. You know.
Now we see why.
Yeah. Unfortunately. It's been a bad year for people that we like. Randy VHR, Leonard Nimoy passing away, Christopher Lee gone. Roddy Piper died over the summer. He was in They Live, one of my favorite action movies of all time. And now this. You know, can you people please quit dying off on us? You know? But the legacy Wes Craven leaves us as horror fans is, and I hate to use the word indelible because it sounds so phony and cliched, but if you think about it, let's look at the majority of his work. He did perhaps one of the most controversial horror films of all time, Last House on the Left. Very disturbing remake of The Virgin Spring. You know, and when you see it for the first time, you're like, what the hell is this? It's just so evil and violent, you know. You know, women getting raped and getting stabbed and shot. And you know, you're just like, damn.
And that was his first major film, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he did some adult movies. He shot some adult. He wasn't in any adult movies.
I figured that.
And it was one of the most interesting things I found about Wes Craven. You know, I learned about Wes Craven is he didn't watch his first movie until he was in college, because he came from a very, very strict religious background that forbid movies.
Oh, wow. Essentially.
Yeah. So he did, so he, you know, and he's, you know, he, and he's, you know, I wish I had some audio clips here, but he fell in love with it, and he fell in love with, you know, violence and darkness, and, you know,
and became a legend.
Yes, he did.
I can't get over it. Like, I grew up in the 90s, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Scream was the it movie in the 90s. Everyone saw Scream. Everyone dressed up as Ghostface for Halloween. I mean, he was from Cleveland. He was from my area. I mean,
that's true.
If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have some of the greatest horror characters. Like, we wouldn't have Freddy Krueger. We wouldn't have Ghostface.
No,
like, there wouldn't have been the remake of Last House on the Left if it wasn't for his original Last House on the Left.
Mm-hmm.
He gave Johnny Depp his first major acting role in a film.
Yeah, well, let's not forget that. I mean, let's not forget that. Well, you meant, now going back to Scream, say what you will about the franchise as a whole, you know, and I haven't watched Scream in, like, years, so I don't really know how it stands up today, 20 years later. We're going on 20 years, God, I don't know.
Oh, it still stands up, because I watched it probably in the last month. It still stands up.
Yeah, but there's no doubt that he gave horror the much-needed kick in the ass it needed in the 90s, because look what happened between then and, you know, essentially the collapse of horror starting really in the late 80s, you know, between the late 80s and until Scream came out in 96. It originally was not a hit. Originally, that's the odd part about it. It wasn't a hit. It got a nice word of mouth going, and then all of a sudden people were clamoring to watch it.
Yeah, we didn't see it in the theaters, but I remember we rented it from Blockbuster when it was still around.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of another relic of a bygone era. I remember being at the, when Scream came out, just being so low on horror because nothing was really catching my eye. I mean, you had like the Hellraiser movies were putting out sequels, Candyman was putting out a sequel, and I mean, there were a few good horror movies in the bunch, but you really didn't have like one big explosive horror movie, and then Scream comes out, and then all of a sudden horror becomes a hot commodity again.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing that came from the fallout of Scream, it allowed Wes Craven to direct a movie with Meryl Streep called Music of the Heart. If you can believe that, yes, it was about hold on here, I'm sorry. It was about, you know, she's a teacher. Inner city school kids, the love of classical music, and it earned her. Everything okay?
Yeah, I just didn't know Wes Craven directed that one.
Yeah, he did. It actually, and Meryl Streep got an Oscar nomination from that movie. So, I haven't seen that one. So, I can't really say.
I think they made us watch that one in school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But the thing we're talking mainly about is the mark he left on the world of horror. And you mentioned Nightmare on Elm Street and the character he created, the Freddy Krueger character he created, which arguably is the biggest icon in the world of horror. You can easily throw him in there with Frankenstein, Dracula.
If you just think of the top three killers in horror for the modern age of horror, Freddy, Jason, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you wouldn't have Freddy if you didn't have Wes.
Yeah, and the thing with Freddy, though, is unlike Jason, Jason and Michael, he kind of transcended his horror roots, because especially me growing up in the late 80s, he was everywhere. He had his own TV show. I finally listened to some of his music album he put out, and no, it's not very good, but
you mean the cheesy one with the girls? Do the Freddy.
Yeah.
I have that album.
He did. You know, I'm trying to think. He did a cover. I think he did a cover of that song. All I Have to Do Is Dream, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he did that one. Nope. Yeah, it was interesting. But yeah, especially in the late 80s, he was on trading cards. He was in video games. He even had his own 1-900 number, not that I ever called it or anything, but no, dude, I never did. Go to YouTube and look it up. He had his own 900 number, and you can enter to win a con. Yeah, he tell you if you call now, you can enter to win a part of Nightmare on Elm Street 6. Of course, I don't know anybody who would want to win a part on that movie, but it was horrible.
All right, sure, 27. The contest is over. No.
Yeah, I think they found a winner, and I'm sure that their part was cut.
Oh.
I'm sure, but anyway, 1-877-552-4073 is the number to call. If you guys want to get in the conversation tonight, we're talking about the legacy of the late, great Wes Craven and what he's left behind for us here in the world of horror. So when you look now, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, the Scream franchise basically brought horror out of the doldrums, and is enjoying a boom that is still being felt today. You know, thanks to that, and in a lot of ways, he also was responsible for some of the evil, dirty grittiness of 70s horror film up until Halloween came out. Because if you watch like The Hills Have Eyes or Last House Left, there's just like, you know, you kind of feel dirty afterwards. You want to take a shower, kind of thing.
The Hills Have Eyes. That one was just crazy. And he found the perfect star, Michael Berryman. I mean, that movie was just so messed up.
And I believe he got the idea to make that movie from a 17th century Scottish legend, I believe, if memory serves. From a 17th century movie. I mean, not movie. What am I talking about? A character of Scottish, I believe, was in Scottish folklore. No, sorry. Here. All right. So now, some of his lesser known work seems to have a spot in the world of. Seems to have a spot for us here in the world of horror. He did a movie called Deadly Blessings, and I saw this movie in the drive when I was like 6 years old. My parents. And I barely remember seeing it. I do remember, though, this one part when a spider goes down a woman's throat. It was just like, spider, 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 spider. I remember hearing those words, and then the spider goes down the woman's throat. That's what I remember seeing it. I was like I felt like 5 or 6 at the time. I have to watch that again. No, that's another movie that there was one movie I hadn't seen up until last week he did. It was called The Serpent and the Rainbow.
I was just about to mention that because I got that at a yard sale for like 50 cents on VHS.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Strange.
That's
probably the best word to describe it.
You know, there were some very genuine, scary moments that rivaled Nightmare on Elm Street, especially... like the part when Bill Pullman's hallucinating, and you know, and his coffin's filling up with blood, or when he's sinking down on the ground, and stuff like that. And the guy who who was messing with the voodoo guy, the voodoo guy who was messing with his head, he really screwed with his head on that one.
That was probably the weirdest part, the voodoo guy. He creeped me out. Like,
yeah.
Just, eek.
Very,
it was just a strange movie. It wasn't something I was used to, kind of, with him. Like, the first, like I said, the first movie I ever saw at Wes Craven's was Scream, and then I saw Freddy, and this one was just a little more, it was out there compared to the other ones.
Yeah. And the scary part about it is, was that, I mean, voodoo's a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't some kind of cheesy, wasn't some kind of a cheesy setup, you know, or anything. This was the real deal, you know. But anyway, I digress. 1-877-552-4073 is the number to call if you guys want to get in tonight on the conversation, and 323-843-6113 for our international listeners. We got about 23 minutes left if you guys want to get in on the conversation tonight. It's all about Wes Craven and the legacy he left behind. And we're talking, you know, we mentioned Scream earlier. He actually kicked off like the meta horror craze of the 90s with his new Nightmare movie, which was of course the one when Freddy is an entity trying to break out of the films and into our actual reality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know,
it tricked me into watching it.
What's that?
It tricked me into watching it.
The return of
Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't. Yeah,
didn't say it was going to be 2 seconds on a TV screen.
Yeah, actually, I read like some stuff about that movie, New Nightmare. Wes Craven wanted to ask Johnny Depp to be in the movie, but he was too scared to do it. So like a few years later, after Scream came out, he told Johnny Depp about it, and Johnny looks at him and goes, "Why didn't you ask? I would have loved to have done it." Yeah,
Johnny Depp
could have
been
like,
in Scream. That would have been Scream.
Well,
had my first movie crush, Skeet Ulrich.
No.
Kind of looks like Johnny Depp in a way.
Well, no, actually, he was going. He asked Johnny Depp if he. He said, I was going to ask you if you wanted to be in my new Nightmare movie.
Oh, okay.
That's what it'd been.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant he wanted him to be in Scream. That would have been interesting.
Oh, no.
That would have been awesome.
Nope. But, what was it? Oh, yes. But still, the thing about Johnny Depp, though, the thing is, my favorite Nightmare on Elm Street death is when he dies. That's when crazy.
Yes, and they had to turn the entire room upside down to get that effect for the blood volcano.
And there's a scene in Never Sleep Again, the Nightmare on Elm Street Legacy, the documentary they did on the movies, where there's this cut scene where he rises back up out of the bed and he's all like drenched in blood and everything, and I'm like, why didn't you just keep that in there?
Just for like a quick like a double tap, he comes up like no, and then goes back into bed.
that would have been interesting. But no, the new Nightmare. I mean, I like the movie and everything. You know, unfortunately though, it was just put out at the wrong time in 1994 when horror movies were at an ebb. And oh my God, here's a story for you. I saw this movie in the theaters the weekend it came out, and like 80% of the audience were kids. Were like grade school kids. And that, I was just like, okay.
Who the hell are your parents?
Yeah, right. And yeah, some had parents with them. It's like, this isn't the kind of Freddy movie where we're making wisecracks. You know, it's not like that god awful Freddy's Dead, you know, the Final Nightmare.
Wait, was it Freddy's Dead who had Johnny Depp on the screen for 2 seconds?
Yeah, him with a frying pan.
Okay, that's the one that tricked me into watching it. Fuckers.
Yeah, Mr. Brain on drugs once again. I like that scene too.
You know, I think my favorite Freddy, like, death, other than, of course, the Johnny Depp death, is the human mannequin.
The
ventriloquist, when he, like, uses his nerves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That fucked me up.
Wes Craven wrote the screenplay for that. He didn't have anything really to do with the movies after one, except New Nightmare. He directed that. But, like, he did write the screenplay for 3, and, you know, and it's my favorite sequel of all the movies, and it is in my top 3.
Yeah, with Patricia Arquette, that one was, after
mm-hmm.
the first one, that's the best one.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the scene where he's, like, trying to eat her, and he's, like, a big fucking worm, and ugh.
Yeah. Exactly. Some other movies, like, he did Deadly Friend, which is, like, it came out in 86. It was, like, a modern take on Frankenstein. And probably had one of the worst death scenes ever in a horror movie where Christy Swanson, she had been reanimated, reprogrammed, or whatever, and she's back to life, and she starts killing people. She kills this one dude with a basketball, takes his head off with a basketball.
Oh.
And I'm like, what the hell? It wasn't
Passed
one of
a little bit too hard.
Yeah. It wasn't one of his finer moments in film.
That's the thing with Wes Craven. He had hits, but he also mm-hmm. had misses. Like,
yeah. My Soul to Take.
I was just about to say that. I have never seen himself reference himself so much.
And that was sad. You know, it was like he did. I mean, this is the same guy that did the Nightmare on Elm Street and all those kind of movies, and really, his last two movies, My Soul to Take and Scream 4, were not very good.
Well, Scream 4, I just didn't like the end. Sydney should have freaking died.
That was one of the problems I had with the movie. It was like the characters from the first three movies, they were all still alive. I'm like, give me a freaking break here.
I mean, a little bit of surprise, something we didn't expect.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was. It was just pretty much the same old thing. And
but it wasn't terrible, yeah. Not like Scream 3.
Another big disappointment.
Even Scream 2 is okay with Jada Pinkett Smith. I could stand that one.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I like that one.
But I could Scream 3. I was like, what the hell? What the hell?
Did you ever see the movie Red Eye by any chance?
No, I have not.
2005. Okay, that's. It's not a horror movie per se. It's more a thriller, like a tension-building thriller.
Oh, yeah, I know which one it is, the airplane. Okay. I know which one it is. I just never saw it.
That was really good. Cillian Murphy was awesome as the bad guy in that one. And he had a good run that year. He was also the Scarecrow in the Batman Begins.
Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, that exactly. All right, 1-877-552-4073 is the number to call if you guys want to get in on the conversation tonight. 323-843-6113 for our international listeners. We've got a few more minutes talking about Wes Craven, and then a look at what's coming up here on DBHR, and we're glad that you took some time out of your busy lives to join us here tonight, or if you're listening on the archives, we definitely appreciate that. All right, so essentially, in closing, Wes Craven, in a lot of ways, he changed. He was very original with his ideas. You know, he revived a morbid genre in the mid-90s with his movies. his sense of, he had this wonderful sense of darkness, this wonderful sense of art in a lot of his, in a lot of his movies. You know, and you can see his influence can still be, will still be felt today.
He was a man who inspired generations of horror fans. First generation was inspired with Last House on the Left, the grittiness of the 70s. Then he inspired the next generation in the 80s with the both terrifying and sarcastic Freddy Krueger. And in the 90s, he revived an entire genre with Ghostface and Scream. I mean, he was a Renaissance man. He could do it all. He could... His films still stand up to the test of time, and at the time, they were the perfect films to come out at that time. I mean, he inspired so many people to watch horror movies. I mean,
you got people into them.
Yeah, you got a friend who wants to see a horror movie, show him Nightmare on Elm Street, or show him Scream, or, you know, he's definitely someone you can fall back on to show someone a great horror film.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, now, would I put him in, say, like, the roles of a Hitchcock, perhaps? Or a Martin Scorsese, perhaps? No, I wouldn't go that far. But, his legacy needs to be talked about when you mention other fine directors of that era. Oh, and I forgot to mention Shocker.
I forgot to mention that.
His attempt to bring like a Freddy Krueger style character to life. I don't like it all that much, but it's one of those movies I will watch again and again because it keeps getting cheesier and funnier every time I watch it. And the Blu-ray just dropped here a few weeks ago, so I may pick that up.
I mean,
say what you want to about the movie, but I did like Mitch Pileggi, Horace Pinkerton character. It's just so damn unintentionally funny. You know, he was trying to bring a Freddy Krueger guy back in, you know, back to horror, and it didn't quite work out well, but
it was still an interesting ride.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Oh, hold on 1 second here. There we go. I think I got it. Okay, there we go. Okay. All right. So, we have another 10 minutes or so left. I wanted to remind you that next week, Miss Elizabeth Catherine Gray, she is the head huntress of the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness Contest, and next week she will be on to discuss the rules of said contest. This year's theme is Ascent into Darkness, and I'm definitely looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to see who the wild cards are this year. What will constitute for bonus points? Will constitute for triple bonus points? You okay?
Oh yeah.
Okay, I keep hearing this weird noise. I don't know if it was on your end or what. But yes, looking forward to that as we do every year. I think it's the fifth year we're doing the contest, if I recall.
God, it's been a while.
Yeah, I remember getting started in 2011 because I was asked to be a judge during that year's theme was slasher movies.
I want to say that was my first year too because I remember the slashers.
Yeah, I think that was it, 2011, and this will be our fifth year, so we're old hats at this by now. but that's the thing about the contest, it changes every year, and you know. And she definitely keeps everything interesting for sure. But yeah, she'll be here next week to discuss the rules of the Madness Contest. Now, as far as future episodes go, I'm going to ask somebody who is a Madness contestant here to be on the show in a couple of weeks. She's also a horror model. She's done some brilliant shoots, and she's been in some horror films. Independent horror films, and she's about to be in one now. But I gotta talk to her. I want to talk to her and see if she'll come on or not. I don't want to mention any names or anything. Then October 2nd, we might be off October 2nd because I'm maybe going to a Rift Track screening of Miami Connection.
October 2nd. That's a Friday.
Oh, wait. Let me look at my calendar.
It's a Friday. I have a concert that night.
Oh, shoot. That's August, September. Yeah, October 1st. I'm sorry. My bad. Yeah, October the 1st. May not be on that night.
Because that weekend, Cinema Wasteland too.
Yes, that's right. Cinema Wasteland. We'll definitely be talking more about that here over the next couple of weeks. And that's like our big Comic Con, our big San Diego Comic Cons in Cleveland. You know, with a bunch of like-minded people running around watching movies, getting drunk, buying stuff, watching movies, saying hi to Tom Sullivan, one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
Nicest and most interesting. You could turn a simple question into a 20-minute conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we actually had a nice conversation here last year. It was about CGI and practical effects, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I rail against CGI, I forgot, you know, you can forget easily that he's in the business, so he knows what he's talking about. So.
And he made the best argument for CGI, which is interesting because he's someone who's more so trained along the lines of classical effects. So it's amazing to just hear someone who's, you know, a classic effects type of guy supporting CGI when it is necessary. He just made the best argument.
Mm-hmm. He did. He also, I remember him saying that there's bad practical effects as well as bad CGI effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's something I didn't really think about too much. But he also does some awesome H.P. Lovecraft drawings. I've bought a couple off him before. So very like I said, very personal. This time around, the big deal is the cast of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 is going to be there. Most of the cast members. So
it'll be an interesting panel.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and Ken Forey from the original Dawn of the Dead will be there, and he's one guy I want to get on. I'd like to talk it for a few minutes.
Oh yeah, you know, that's the main one I need.
Kara Shaw, the little girl from Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm. Me and Chris met her at a previous one, so I mean, she's just super nice.
Those are my two big ones. I haven't seen a schedule about what movies they're going to play, or what. I know they're playing Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 Leatherface. I know that much, but I don't remember what they're playing elsewhere. But anyhow, continuing on with our list of what's going on the rest of the year, December the 10th. Yep, looking right now, December the 10th is going to be our big Star Wars episode. By that time, it will be a week till episode 7. I'm going to basically, like, you know, having like these nerdgasms and nerd rushes, saying get here. And then we're going to be off the next 3 weeks, because the next week is the 17th, and I'm going to be waiting with bated breath for the movie to come out. I'll be in the theater somewhere, either watching a marathon or waiting for the movie to pop. Yeah. December 20th. Then the following week is Christmas Eve, and then the following week after that's New Year's Eve. So obviously won't be doing shows then. So we're going to be spilling over into 2016 for the rest of the year. So be sure to stay tuned for all brand new information regarding the fall portion of DBHR for season 5.
Yes.
Alrighty then. So with about 5 minutes left, do I have anything else I want to talk about? Let's see, anything horror related? Oh yeah, I do want to talk about a couple of movies I saw over the summer. Was one's called, you may actually like this one, it's called What We Do in the Shadows, and it's a horror comedy, and it's a mock documentary about these vampires, you know, about these vampires and what they do and and everything. It's actually pretty hilarious. There's this one part where this guy, he's trying to bite this girl's neck, but he hits the jugular instead. So she blood flowing out of her neck. He's trying to slurp it up, and he's like putting newspaper all over the floor and everything. And yeah. And then there's like one scene.
So it's a comedy where vampires are actually vampires and not glittery weird shit.
Yeah, they kind of mock Twilight a little bit too. So.
Oh yeah.
So they bring a new guy into the fold, and he's like trying to dress up like what's his name? Ed Patterson.
Edward. It's sad that I know
Robert
that.
Robert Patterson. Thank you. It's Pattinson, isn't it? I don't know. I can't remember his name.
His wife is giving him pointers.
Yeah. Yes, but anyhow, I digress. Oh, I do want to say this before we sign off. Over the summer, my wife and I went to North Carolina for a vacation, and out on the beach, very relaxing time. And one day, I go shark fishing. I go shark fishing. What they do is you go on this boat, and they take you about an hour outside.
You said we're going to need a bigger boat.
I did say that. What?
Okay, just making sure. Come on.
Oh, yeah, I did say that. But anyway, they take you an hour outside of the dock, and I was also singing the Gilligan's Island theme song, too. Yeah, they take you an hour outside the docks, and you basically drop, you know, your pole into the water, and you sit around and wait. Well, there were a few people that caught these sharks. They were about as big as my arm, essentially. and see what happens when you get a shark on the line, the assistants have to, you know, reel it up for you and everything, and then they take it out. Take the hook out, and they look at you, and they go, "Do you want to keep this, or do you want to put it back in the water?" Well, they all say, "We want to keep this." So, assistant goes off, and he takes the shark, and he bashes him over the head on the deck.
Oh, hell no.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I probably would have hit him.
It would have been like, well, they wanted to keep it. It was like they'd taken this boom, boom, boom over. You know, on the deck, it's rather intense. And just for the record, if I would have caught a shark that day, I would have said, just put it back. Because it's like, what purpose do I need with a shark? You know?
What the fuck?
Sharky's pretty good, though.
Yes, but I'm sure there's got to be, like, a more humane way than to bash the fucker in the head.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they have anything readily available, but... That's my shark fishing story, and that wraps up this edition for Dollar Bin Horror Radio. Don't forget that Miss Elizabeth Catherine Gray, the head hauntress of the Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness Contest, will be joining us next week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and we hope you tune in for that. But until then, this is Eric Polk talk with this Ronnie Reaper saying to all of Reaply Nation, now.